chill. Up and down there, fine. I'm just a sexy boy. I'm not your boy toy.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. I am your host this evening, Doug Hummer. We are talking Survivor Series 1995 this evening. And joining me, as always, Brother Daniel.
Hey, everybody.
All right, Eric is here.
What's up?
All right, Stevie's here.
Hey, how's it going?
And joining us, our very special guest, a man who was at Survivor Series 1995, Mr. Barry Horowitz.
Hey, guys. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much for being here. It's an honor to have you on again. I know it's been a couple of years, but definitely appreciate you coming back.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me back.
No problem. Right off the bat, Barry, is there anything that you need to plug before we get going here?
Oh, yeah, sure. My fan support is the technical group, I call them, and they're unbelievable. I call them technical because that's me, Mr. Technical, a.k.a. Barry Horowitz. And Cameo.com is off the charts lately. It's just been doing well for me for the last year. I'm also on a new platform of Memo.com. Pro Wrestling Tees, all of a sudden, the last few weeks has blown up. YouTube, my YouTube show that shows every Saturday, Stories from the Road with Barry Horowitz. And, just got back this week from a couple of trips locally in Florida and also Pennsylvania area. I'm going to New York next week. So, busy traveling and, that's all my stuff, my new merchandise. I've got the pint-size figures of Barry Horowitz. I've got two action figures that will be ready in probably 6 or 7 months that are huge. They're actually probably the best ones that are going to be out, better than Jack's, better than anybody. Also got a big wrestling buddy out now, lapel pins with me patting myself on the back, a new trading card, which is different than the photo. It's an actual – looks like a portrait, a painting, but it's miniaturized. So it's really cool. And I also wanted to give a quick shout-out to my fans and belated Veterans Day to everybody that serves. I appreciate you so much. Without you guys, we wouldn't be able to live the land of the free.
Absolutely, 100%. Thank you for that, Barry, and look for all that great Barry Horowitz merchandise that's going to be coming out.
Yeah, go pick up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What the heck?
Yeah. And to be honest with you, as a collector of action figures.
Yeah, we'll be browsing. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think it's Zombie Sailor or Sailor Zombie. They're one of them. And then the other one, I'm not sure. It's fairly new. I just signed a deal with them, so. But I've seen some of their work, and, I mean, these are not just lookalikes. They're identical. I mean, I never seen anything like it. I mean, technology has really come a long way. And real quick, I don't want to get on this longer than anything, but I'm a big firm believer. I don't talk about politics or religion, but I am a big believer in wear the mask, wash your hands, and get your shots, and that's it. Don't make a big deal out of it, folks. You make big deals out of poverty and feed the world and stuff, but nothing's so, small of that. I mean, it's like everybody's got to complain about something or pick at something. Go to a wrestling match and pat yourself on the back, damn it.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
That's what you need to do. Shoot. Yeah. Loosen up, folks.
Absolutely. Exactly. I think we can all agree with you 100%.
No, absolutely.
Definitely on that. All right, now, getting into Survivor Series 1995, well, before we get into Survivor Series 95, Barry, this isn't the first Survivor Series you wrestled at, right? Weren't you one of the guys under the mask in 93?
Yes, I was the Red Knight in 93.
Okay.
That's what you're talking about, correct?
Correct, yes.
Okay, that was That was the main event against the Hart family. Shawn Michaels, which it was supposed to be Lawler, but he was in legal problems, and that's another story. But so it was Shawn Michaels, the Red Knight, and his Knights. We were the main event at the Boston Gardens. Ray Combs was the special ring announcer. It was really overwhelming, sold out, an iconic building.
Right. Now, were you the original plan for the Red Knight, or were you basically, or was it basically just, okay, we don't have a plan, but he's here, so let's put the hood on him?
Yeah. The story is, anybody that's under contract, I don't know how it is now, you know, you're getting paid, you're under contract, you're at the building. You just never know when something happens, and it was one of those days. I actually took, and I'm quite honored that I took Terry Funk's place. He was actually supposed to be the Red Knight. Now, I've only met Terry twice in my career. I've wrestled him once back in 83 for Crockett Promotions and in Savannah, Georgia. And I don't know if he didn't want to do it, but the story was, and when you hear it two or three times in the wrestling business, you know, telephone, telegraph, tell a wrestler, where there's smoke, there's fire. I think he called up Vince and said, I can't come, my horse is sick.
Yeah, I believe
that was the answer. Now, think about it. If you're a horse breeder, these horses aren't a couple of grand. I mean, they range up there big time, $500,000, $1 million, $1 million. I mean, I'm sure if you talk to somebody like Terry Bradshaw, that's a horse breeder, or any of these other big local ranchers in Texas or Wyoming, it's big money. So who knows? Maybe, who knows? I don't know. Or was it a rib? Who knows, coming from Terry Funk? I don't care. I was the Red Knight, and I progressed with that for about, after that event, maybe another 6 or 7 months, tagging with various knights, tagging with Pat Tanaka, and it was pretty cool. Why not? It was just something different.
Right. I mean, and to be honest with you, that particular Survivor Series match is probably in my top 10 because I always liked the dynamic of the Hart family, and that's where Owen started the seeds of the heel turn.
Yeah.
So it was definitely an iconic match, you know, for that point. Now, Survivor Series, were you a fan of the Survivor Series match concept?
I think so. I liked when they first came out with the Survivor Series, if I'm not mistaken, Survivor Series was on Thanksgiving Day. They actually did it Thanksgiving Day. Because I remember one of the buildings, they catered it for us. We had Thanksgiving dinner. And then I do remember one time, I don't know the year, but I'll never forget this. I was in the locker room at the Philadelphia Spectrum, and it was Thanksgiving Day, and it was Survivor Series there. And Vince walked in, and Big Sid was there, and I remember him saying, hey, did you get enough turkey, or did you eat plenty of turkey or something? So I don't know if it was that day he was talking about the catering, or did Sid fly in from Memphis later, or maybe I'm getting it confused and it was the day after. I don't know. But I just remember I was involved in a pull-apart between Macho Man Savage and Rick Rude. And at the Philadelphia Spectrum. I could be getting those wrong, too, or the Rosemont Horizon in Chicago. Because I've been to so many iconic buildings, and sometimes it's a blur.
Yeah. Anybody out there listening, like, if there's a story out there about, you know, any pull-aparts between, because I've never heard a story about a pull-apart between Macho Man. I mean, I'm not saying it wouldn't happen, because I'm sure it would happen.
It happened. Yeah, I know, that's weird. Macho Man and Rick Rude. It pulled apart. We did it, like, in the hallway. It went from the bathroom or something in that the restroom area to the hallway there. It was, like I said, it was either the Spectrum or the Rosemont Horizon.
Okay. Wow. But, so, all right, so we're in Survivor Series 1995, and the Monday Night Wars had just started. They've been going on for a couple months, and this is the first Survivor Series to not be really associated with Thanksgiving because it took place on a Sunday.
Right.
You're in Landover, Maryland at the US Air Arena. Attendance is 14,500. Did you like wrestling in the nation's capital?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The buildings were always nice. The airport, the hotels, the gyms, really, really awesome. Nice and clean. Yeah, it was another great town. Good fans, really good wrestling fans.
Okay. Now, the dark match on this show was the Smoking Guns, Billy and Bart, who were the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions at the time, defeating the team of Public Enemy, Rocco Rock and Johnny Groans, who were still technically working for ECW at the time.
Right.
Do you remember, was this a tryout for Rocco and Johnny?
I think it was. I'm not positive on that one, but I think it was. I think they may have had a couple of tryouts. Yeah, sometimes it happens that way, and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you don't even get a tryout. They don't have time, or they didn't like it, or, you know, it's a weird situation. There's many times, I've been on various different shows of Superstars, Monday Night Raw, any of these, even pay-per-views, and I've been at the gorilla position, ready to go. I mean, Gorilla Monsoon, Gino says, go. You go through the black curtain. I'm oiled up. I'm pumped up. I'm ready. All of a sudden, Barry, we don't have time for your match. It's nothing personal. I get paid for it, and I don't take it personal, and they don't have time. That's just the way it goes. I don't care who you are. They don't have time. This is live, you know, pay-per-view or live Monday Night Raw. You can't dick around.
Right. Now, and I ask about the tryout because I know at the time Bruce Pritchard and Paul Heyman were friends. So was this basically just, you know, Paul calling Bruce and saying, hey, I got two guys here. Can you, you know, give them a tryout or something like that? Or was it Rock?
I really couldn't answer that.
That's
ironic that both of them were my manager at one time. I don't even think they know who I am anymore, but that's another story. Yeah, I don't know how that corresponded, to be honest with you. I didn't know those two were buddies. Yeah, the most I knew Paul Heyman was really from Tennessee and Florida when he was Paulie Dangerously. And then Bruce Pritchard, I know him all through all his gimmicks. Then he managed me in the Global Wrestling Federation, GWF. So, yeah, I don't know about that. I really don't. You know, some of that stuff you don't find out about. That's in the war room. And, you know, normally wrestlers aren't in the war room.
Okay, so the pay-per-view opens with the return of Mr. Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to come out. He's going to do commentary because Lawler's involved in a match.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Barry, was Perfect a surprise to you guys, or did you guys know he was coming back?
No, it was a surprise. To me, it was a surprise anyway, and I was glad because I know Kurt a long time, and, you know, I've got a good friendship with Kurt. Like I said, I know him really a long time, and, I was shocked. I was surprised. I'm sure I may have heard a few rumors, but again, some of that was kayfabe and stuff, so who knows? So you don't know what to believe sometimes.
Right. Daniel, I'm going to bring you in real quick here. When you saw Perfect come out and you saw he's going to do commentary.
Yes, sir.
What did you think? Obviously, you know, because we're used to Jerry Lawler doing the commentary at the time, but did you see this as kind of like a breath of maybe fresh air?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's exciting, and I mean, I'm a sucker for a heel color commentator. I mean, that's why I love the King's work so much. But I mean, perfect fit right in, and he did his job very well. Mm-hmm. Of you know, and him even, you know, we're skipping a little ahead, so I won't get into it too much. But when Shawn Michaels comes out and during the wild card match. All he's doing the whole time is talking trash about Shawn Michaels, and that's what you expect, you know, Mr. Perfect to do. So, I don't know. I thought he did a great job. I thought it was awesome.
Right, Eric. What did you think of Eric? What did you think of Mr. Perfect's commentary, like as a whole?
I thought he did a good job. I thought it was entertaining, and he kept the show going.
Yeah,
but what I definitely want to talk about. Is the first match, because not only, I mean, we have the man here, that this feud between Skip and Barry Horowitz was groundbreaking for a lot of different reasons. And there's a lot of stuff that goes into this whole match, because we got a few different issues going on here, obviously. And I know you'll definitely talk about it, Doug. But Barry, for you, because I've been dying to ask you this question. I'm such a big fan. How did it feel having this be such the big program of this match? I know they showcase Marty Jannetty a lot and Kid, obviously. But you and Skip were really the reason people were like, it's the underdogs versus the Body Donnas. How big did this feud feel for you at the time?
Oh, wow. I was just glad that the gimmick – if you want to call it that, the program, the angle was progressing. I mean, it was always progressing. We me and Hakushi were tagged. We did stuff at the Garden, Six Man. We did a commercial together for Karate Fighters. Everything, there was always a step up. There was always something going on. I was in a celebrity softball game. I mean, there was a lot of There was a lot of surprises for myself, updating my own gimmick and progressing in the match, making it, you know, beat Skip in under 10 minutes, and then SummerSlam and Survivor Series and the underdogs. I mean, it was awesome. I mean, it just, they kept it alive, which I'm glad. I mean, that's the way you want to do stuff. I mean, that's how I was taught anyway.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, because for any big Barry Horowitz fan, and to me, for any Skip fan, too, I mean, this is the feud a lot of people kind of go to. It's like, this is the one. This is like, because, I mean, you've done work, obviously, a long time before this and long time after. You've been very active for a long time. But this is the this is the feud that it's like, you know, Barry's becoming the man. And we're watching all this happen. It's the underdog stuff, and you just want to root for this guy. And Skip's so good at being such a I don't want to say a douche, but he's so good at being the bad guy. Did you feel like an innate chemistry almost with Skip? Because it comes through on the TV screen. Did you feel like a chemistry in the ring with him?
Yes, without a doubt. I've only had that with a few workers, and these workers were all in a place of their own, if you will. You know, if you know, you got Skip, Owen Hart, Brad Armstrong, Scott Armstrong, Tim Horner, Tommy Wildfire Rich, Tom Zink, Brian Pillman, Reno Riggins, Ben Jordan, Sam Houston. There's a list, and the reason I prefer these wrestlers, they're technical wrestlers also. So you got babyface against heel, but technical style. And they all did what I liked is I have this thing, and when I do seminars, which I didn't even mention on the other things, that I do also meet and greets, and I do seminars that are normally about 3 or 4 hours long at various schools across the United States that run shows and have wrestling schools. And basically, it's mentally and physically I'm teaching them. You know, the ins and outs, it's just not grabbing a headlock and taking over, taking a tackle. It's more than that. And I try to almost squeeze in my 18 months of training with the great Malenko and his sons into 3 hours, which is really hard. Because I trained for 3 days a week, 3 hours a night, for 18 months, never missed a workout. And then, you know, that built the foundation of me, and then I got polished when I traveled. But, yeah, as far as the getting back to the chemistry, the little secret is, and I tell us, this is why I was alluding to my seminars, get the match over. And a lot of, you have to break that down. It doesn't mean get the match over quick and get to the locker room and take a shower. It means get the match over. It means when I wrestle Skip over, get Barry over, get the referee over, get the whole crowd over. Not just it's all about me and it's all about Barry and put myself over. If you think that way, it's going to be a shitty match and you're going to see it on TV, especially the smart marks. They're going to see it. They're going to see right through it. It's almost like telling me it's right up there with saying, hey, go 20 minutes with the Ultimate Warrior. Well, you don't want to do that. You want to do about 7 minutes because after 8 minutes, you're going to put holes in a match. And what does the holes mean? You see through the match. The music stops, so does the match when it comes to him. But that's, again, that's another thing. So that's what I'm talking about, our chemistry with all those guys I've mentioned. And I'm probably leaving out some. Demolition is out there and Ron Simmons. I'm not leaving people out on purpose. The great late Mike Graham. Get the match over. When you get the match over, you're having fun, but not haha fun. You're having physical wrestling fun, you know. And it's a pleasure. There's no pulling teeth or I don't want to put you over and do this, and I'm worried about my win loss record, and which really, really bothers me. I mean, if you're worried about your win-loss record, dude, you need to call Dana White up and ask to have a tune-up match for the UFC with Brock Lesnar. He'll punch you in the face in 10 seconds. You'll beg Vince to come back to work.
Absolutely. And so, it's interesting the way you say that, too, about, you know, it's not all about me. It's about – because
right.
This was your moment. This was when the underdog shined, but you're still making Skip look like $1 million the whole time. Like Skip still looks very strong, but and he's making you look really good as the underdog too. It's interesting watching that chemistry work together.
Because we both do have that chemistry and that mentality of get the match over. I'll give you a great example. I'm not a huge fan of Lex Luger. I will say he's one of the best, you know, I call it like it is, guys. He's one of the best big men I worked, best press slam in the business as far as protecting me and taking care of me. I worked with him in Poughkeepsie, New York on a Monday Night Raw. And he sold for me like, it was incredible. But, of course, he won the match, torture rack, and what have you. I don't think I'm going to say the person who said this because there's two things I do in this business and interviews. Sometimes I do call a person out or I knock them or I just call it like it is. And then sometimes, you know what? I don't feel like putting your name over on my interview. Mm-hmm. It's all about other people that I mentioned like Skip or Marty Jannetty or Bob Holly or Barry Horowitz or Gorilla Monsoon. But I'm not going to mention this guy's name because I really don't care.
Okay.
And he says to either, I don't think he said it to me. I think he went up to Lex and said, who are they trying to get over in that match, you or Barry? Now think about, you said this now, you're a fucking mark saying that statement. You're a mark. You're a stupid mark. What? See, what Lex did was smart. See, you just beat somebody, they don't care. They see Barry, oh my God, is he going to upset us? And go back and forth, I'm covering them, I'm going for holds, I'm drop kicking them. We're having a match. I got to give credit to Lex for that. I will give him credit for that. And so whoever said that, who did say that, yeah, I'll never understand some of these guys in the business. I don't get it. It perplexes me. Sometimes it's the mindset or the way they were broken in. If I had my way, everybody would be broken in Japan and stay there for a year. And you'd learn how to respect the business and go up the stairs properly and go down the stairs properly. Instead of being million-dollar body with a 10-cent brain and don't know a wrist lock from a wristwatch.
Hell yeah.
100% agree with those sentiments. So
thank you.
opening match, Body Donitz with the Skip, Rad Radford, Dr. Tom Pritchard, and the 1-2-3 Kid, who is
mm-hmm.
substituting for Jean-Pierre Lafitte.
Yeah, right.
Do you know, like, was Lafitte fired?
You know, that's a good question. You know, I honestly can't answer that like I did some other of your questions. I mean, I'll call it like it is. Excuse me. I'm not positive on that one. Let's put it this way. I'm going to go with 50% I don't know and 50% I may have heard that. And I'm not kayfabing you. I'm being honest with you. That's a long time ago, and a lot of stuff has happened in the last few years between me wrestling for WWF and All Japan and WCW and multiple indies. So, you know, you run into thousands of wrestlers, thousands of fans. So,
right. Yeah, I mean, I know because I know from reading Shawn Michaels' book, his first book, that him and Hunter didn't really see the – you know, didn't really see anything in the pirate gimmick. And they were in Vince's ear at the time. So
yeah,
I
didn't know those two were in charge.
Well, they thought they were.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So, the Body Donitz are taking on the underdogs, which obviously you're the captain, and you got Marty Jannetty, Hakushi.
Yep.
Marty Jannetty, Hakushi, and Bob Holly, who was actually substituting for Avatar, which was Al Snow under a mask, correct?
Yeah. Yes.
Why was he pulled?
You know, that I don't know. I absolutely don't know at all. The Avatar gimmick did not get over at all, and it really didn't suit Al Snow. He's a much better worker than an Avatar thing. I mean, I'm just being honest. I mean, and his work's progressed over the years from the Avatar. In fact, I don't think he was happy with it either, and it kind of like almost put him in a almost like, I mean, I can't speak for him, but almost put him in a, you know, I travel with him and Glenn Jacobs, and I don't think he was, you know, it made him down. Let's put that. He wasn't pissed. It was just, it wasn't going the way he thought.
Right. And you had brought up with the team, Doug, that Hakushi is also there. Now, a lot of people would put kind of Hakushi and Barry in the same sentence around this time. Barry, did you enjoy working with Hakushi? Because you brought him up earlier about tagging with him and progressing and stuff. I think a lot of people would put you two in top 10 underrated lists together. What was your opinion on Hakushi?
Excellent. Great personality. Good athlete, hit the gym together, just a good person. I like hanging with guys, and I like guys that mirror myself or I mirror them. And he was like that. He was a pleasure to be around, and he was happy to be in the States because he was, you know, he's from I'm not mistaken, Tokyo, and he's just it was big for him to come to New York, and he was buying everything in sight, leather jackets, and he was buying everything that was popular you could think of that Americans would wear. He was just, and he was happy, and he liked eating at different restaurants. He was just a pleasure. I wish more guys in the business, again, he had that thought process of the good chemistry and getting the match over. Good guy. Excellent guy. In fact, yeah, I rate him up there in flawless.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, as fans, we because there's enough of it in wrestling fans, the armchairing, quarterbacking, and what could happen if this and that. But just in your humble opinion, do you think they could have – because it was a badass gimmick. Do you think they could have done a little more with Hakushi?
Yes. Probably – this is me knowing different things. I'm going to say maybe – his size and his height, maybe, but I don't know. The tattoos was the first time I ever seen that done that way. Now everybody's got that. It was just so cool. I liked his gimmick. I liked his name. It was almost like he was right out of Mortal Kombat or something. You know, that hat he had on. And I'm sure there's a proper name for that hat, but I just don't know. But, yeah, he's just, they could have because, well, let's put it this way, gentlemen. They're pushing Orange Cassidy. Come on now. I don't mean nothing in disrespect. I like the guy. I've met him one time at an indie show in Baltimore. Nice guy. Very nice guy. We did a promo together for the internet. And his work, he does some pretty good stuff. I mean, he's a small guy, but he's lean. He's cut. That thing he does with his hands in his pocket, I've never seen anybody do. I wouldn't even attempt that. That's scary, man, because let me tell you something. If one little thing happens, somebody moves, something happens, he's going to be crippled, dead, or really hurt bad. Think about it. Your hands are in your pockets. It's like jumping off a building without a parachute.
Yeah.
No thanks. I'll stick to arm drags and techno wrestling, thank you.
Right. Yeah. Now, in this match, obviously, again, like Daniel said, the big program, obviously, because Skip is the captain of the Body Donnas. You're the captain of the Underdogs. So, obviously, it's you and Skip. But with the addition of 1-2-3 Kid and obviously Jannetty in there, they're playing out the fact that those two guys used to be friends. And, you know, you got Rad Radford in there, you know, Louis Spicoli and Dr. Tom Pritchard in there. Obviously, guys from Jim Cornette's Smoky Mountain Wrestling.
Yep.
Was Smoky Mountain was just about done by this time, right?
I think so. Oh, yeah. I think so. I did a few matches with them. I like Smoky Mountain.
I mean, I thought it was a very underrated promotion myself, and I love Jim Cornette. I think Jim Cornette is a brilliant, you know, wrestling mind. So, you know, I was a fan of the promotion. I just think, unfortunately, it kind of came, you know, at a time where, you know, the territories were just, unfortunately, they were dying.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a shame, Smoky Mountain, because in my eyes, it was a more wrestling unit than ECW. ECW is just ECW hardcore. Let's cuss. Let's jump off of shit and, you know, whatever. And I'm sure there's been some technical people there. Dean Malenko and I'm pretty sure Eddie Guerrero and Benoit and other people. But ECW is more wrestling-oriented, kind of old school, the TV and so forth. I think there was, I don't know, I've heard this, but I think Tim Horner and Cornette were in charge, and I think they were, I heard that Tim Cornette despises Tim Horner, and I just can't fathom that, because I know Tim Horner very, very well. I roomed with him. We shared an apartment in Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, Jimmy Crockett Jr., Sr., and I mean, that's where I got polished for 2 years. I was traveling with the best and seeing the best, and I was on the road in a car 5-6 nights a week and on a plane to Canada once a month, and I don't understand that, because Tim's a great guy. Now, Cornette, I don't know as well. I know he could, you know, say certain things and different things, so I don't know. I don't have not too much going-ons with Jim Cornette as far as I've seen him in the locker room or at meet and greets and so forth, and he's been, you know, pleasure and pleasant and put me over on his podcast. Somebody emailed me about 6 months ago, which I was stunned. And that was just but he made sense what he said about me, and I appreciated that a lot. I haven't heard a comment like that in probably ever. So that was pretty cool of him.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, because I've heard his burial of Tim Horner. And then I think a few years ago there was a wrestler that actually went by Tim Horner Jr.
Really?
And, Yeah. Now, he's actually, from what I've heard, because my brother and I actually have a friend that tried to venture into the professional wrestling world.
Yeah, booking. Yeah.
As a booker for a small time promotion outside of Buffalo, New York, but unfortunately, it didn't really pan out well for him. But he actually had also dealings with this Tim Horner Jr. He had a problem with Tim Horner Jr. Mine and my brother.
Who the hell is Tim Horner Jr.?
Yeah, relation? Is there a relation, or did he just go by it?
He just,
no.
From what I heard, he just went by it.
He did it for the rub?
Yeah. Yeah.
A mark for Tim Horner, or maybe he looks like him, and maybe he asked him or something like that. Who knows? But I've never heard that story, and I've wrestled in Buffalo just last year for, what is that, Nickel City Promotions?
Yep.
Am I saying that right? Buffalo, Nickel City? I don't know. It's one of the largest promotions there. I know there's two of them there, and there's one that failed really bad. I don't even think they're in business at all, ever. So, the one I wrestled for, I did a meet and greet for, and I did a seminar for them. Incredible. They're set up there. Unbelievable. Their school, and they run a show at the same building. And the building is unbelievable. It's like a miniature civic center. Unbelievable. It's got a weight room. It's got lockers. It's got concession stand. It's painted, I think, black and red. They got two rings in there. They run shows. They run a school. It's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool idea. I like it. I liked it a lot. Pretty smart.
Yeah, shout out to Nickel City Promotions in Buffalo, New York. Of course, Daniel and I grew up in Buffalo.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. I think that's where Luger's from originally.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Orchard Park, and I've actually had a conversation with Lex about this.
Oh, wow.
Because I met Lex at a meet and greet, and actually, quick story about Lex. His father owned a piano store in Orchard Park, in Orchard Park, New York. And mine and Daniel's father actually worked. He didn't work there for long. It was only a couple of months, but he actually did work for Lex Luger's father.
Ooh,
very cool.
That's interesting. Yeah, your football team they did well last year. They're trying this year. They're not going to beat my Buccaneers, but you know they're still good.
Yeah, we're not going to beat your Buccaneers. Yeah. We're getting there. But
remember now, gentlemen.
Yeah.
I'm from two different towns.
When that game happens in a few weeks, I don't know how much I'm going to be able to watch.
You guys are killing it down there, old Tom Brady.
Of course we are. We're from, you got to understand, we're renamed, and I'm from Champa Bay, a.k.a. Tampa Bay, if you will.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and I'll say this real quick, and then we'll get back to Survivor Series. I still think that Tom Brady, he's going to play until he gets three more Super Bowl rings, so he has a ring on each finger, and I think it's going to happen the next 3 years.
Yes, I totally agree with you. Anybody that knocks Tom Brady or he's not the GOAT, they're ignorant. They're stupid. The man's work ethic, his mindset, everything he does, he's got the money to take care of himself. He does it right. You don't hear nothing bad about him in the news and anything bad. I mean, he's the ultimate athlete, and I really believe the Super Bowl will be Tampa Bay against the L.A. Rams, and they'll defeat the Rams, just like they did last year when the Chiefs beat them. They went to the Super Bowl, and they annihilated the Chiefs at home. So that's what I think is going to happen. I think he will definitely he'll make history. He's did everything else. You might as well do a repeat. So why not?
Yeah. No.
It's a solid prediction for sure.
Solid prediction. I will not be surprised if it happens.
I won't either. So, I'll be surprised if it don't happen. Seriously.
Right.
I'm serious.
Yeah.
I'm shooting here.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. I don't see a team that can beat. I mean, the Rams like got lucky, and like he'll lose in the regular season, but there's something about playoff Brady that, you know, he's got that winner's mentality.
Yeah, and when you piss Brady off, you know that chip on his shoulder from being, I don't know, drafted 200th or whatever in Michigan and whatever. It doesn't leave, and it's a good chip to be on the shoulder. I like it. I admire it.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's definitely something to admire because that gives you something to play for, definitely. All right, so back to Survivor Series 95.
Yep.
Obviously, this first match, Body Donnas and the Underdogs. And Barry, you pinned Rad Radford in this match. He did the thing with the doing the push-ups, and you got him in that roll-up.
Three-quarter grapevine.
Okay, yeah, I couldn't remember the name, so thank you.
In professional wrestling, it's called three-quarter grapevine. In amateur wrestling, it's called ball and chain.
Okay. Ball and chain, yeah. Okay.
You don't believe me, ask Kurt Angle.
Yeah, I think, don't we have him on speed dial?
No.
Yeah. I kind of wish we did. But anyway, all right, so you pinned Rad Radford. Now, unfortunately, you were eliminated in the match. You were pinned by the Kid. Did you enjoy working with Sean Waltman?
Yeah, actually, I didn't work with him too much in the Fed. I think I worked with him once in Global Lightning Kid. That's it. And I don't recall or recollect too many matches with him. I don't think – I may have worked with him – I don't know, once or twice, and maybe once in Global. Not too many times.
Yeah, because, I mean, I think for a lot of, like, technical wrestling fans, that is kind of a dream matchup. I mean, because you and Kid are two of the best at what you do as far as getting in the ropes and working. So I think a lot of people would look for that, you know.
Right.
Sure.
Now, Eric, I'm going to bring you in real quick here. Mainly,
that's not Eric Bischoff, is it?
Huh?
That's not Eric Bischoff, is it?
No. No.
Better not be.
No.
No, it's not Eric Bischoff. We don't have that kind of stroke in the podcast business yet.
Hey! You don't need that kind of stroke. You got Mr. Technical here. That's the better stroke.
Yeah.
We can get Eric to get us, not this Eric, but we can get Bischoff to maybe go get me a Subway tuna or some coffee or something and take out the trash while you're at it.
Yeah, we'll let him know for the double-double.
Yeah. Now, real quick, before we actually go to Eric, I got to say, you know, Mr. Technical Barry Horowitz, but a old friend of yours, Mr. Craig Johnson, John Horton, he's been on this show a couple of times, and every time he's been on the show, he brings up the fact that he's the one that came up with the winner gimmick for you in GWF.
You know, first of all, that guy's a good announcer, and he's a good guy, good sport. He does his job well. He may have been. I thought it was Eddie Gilbert. I don't know and really don't care because I was happy with it. I mean, whatever they're doing with me, I'm happy. I don't have these problems or ego problems with, I can't do that gimmick, it'll make me look shitty or something, you know. Come on, guys, I'm under contract, I'm making money. Why would you, you know what I mean? It's not like I don't give a crap. I don't have an ego when it comes to that. I mean, my ego, I mean, I joke around and stuff, but I don't have a, you know, I'm not really the world champion. I'm not really the global light heavyweight champion. I don't go to bed with the belt. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Again, that's kind of a markish thing to do. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of any of that stuff. I'm a fan of being accountable and doing my job properly, you know, showing up to the arena on time, not being in the news because I killed myself or I drink too much or I was shouting at a diner or went off on somebody or just something that makes you represent like it puts a bad stain on pro wrestling. It's almost like, you know, oh, they're all like that. They're all from the flea market or carnies or carnivals or backyard wrestling. It's some of those slip through the cracks, some of these people. And I don't want to be no part of that. I don't like it. I wasn't brought up that way, and I wasn't taught that way in the business.
Right. Very understandable. And it kind of leads me to a question, and we'll throw it right to you after, Eric, I promise. But it does lead me to a question I was going to ask you, Barry, about this match in particular, especially when we're talking about ego and stuff. Because one of the things I was wondering, when I was watching the match over again, they did a lot. There was a lot to unpack here, because even though it was the underdogs versus the body downers, there was a lot of other stuff going in besides just yours and Skip's rivalry. You know, we saw Razor Ramon come in the beginning and yell at the kid for a little bit and then walk away. And then we saw Sid come at the end, and he helped with the finish. Do you think all those little things kind of like maybe took away a little bit from the storyline, or were you glad to have all that be a part of it and it's balls to the wall, let's go?
Balls to the wall, let's go. I like it. Why not? Absolutely. It just makes – it goes from chicken shit to chicken salad. I like it.
Absolutely. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Eric, I'm going to throw it to you.
Yes, sir.
What did you think of this opening match?
I thought it was a very solid match. I think everybody got to showcase their talents. It was a good solid match. I thought everybody showed their ability in the ring.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Including you, Barry.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And Stevie, what did you think of this match?
This was a hot opener. The action was good. And the crowd was, like, into it. Plus, there were some good stories weaved into the bout. So pretty much I liked it.
Okay. And I got to say this. The crowd chanting, Barry, Barry, Barry. I mean, obviously, you know, Barry, that had to – I mean, Barry, in the ring, could you even hear the crowd?
Yeah, I can. Yeah, definitely. It's really cool. I mean, you're getting, you know, you're getting your gimmick over, you're getting the name over, you're getting everything over. So it's definitely better than the alternate of nothing. So, yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, there was a lot of pops, especially during this match. There was a lot that the crowd was very excited throughout.
Yeah.
The whole show, too, but especially during this match, you know, when you took out Radford, you know, they were popping. You know, even when some of the heel stuff, when Sid came out, you know, for an almost 19-minute match, the crowd was very invested the whole time. And I guess definitely that says a lot about everyone involved.
Yeah. What's that?
Go ahead, Barry.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Always remember, guys, when it comes to pro wrestling, when it comes to TV, whatever, house shows, spot shows, pay-per-views, the first match and the last match are the most important matches on the card. If you're in either one of them, feel flattered.
Right. Definitely advice to live by.
Yeah, because a lot of people act like it's only the main event. It seems like people forget how important that opener is and how it brings people in and how it makes people ready for the rest of it. That opener is almost just as important, right?
Think about if that first match is flat. That doesn't set a good tone. It's not good. it's not good.
Yeah. Not at all. Now, my favorite spot actually in the match is when Marty Jannetty eliminates Skip with that top rope powerbomb. And obviously that was Skip's move. That was Chris Candido's move.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And Candido actually tells the story that he wanted to do something special in the match, and they were, you know, trying to get Marty over. So Candido went to Marty and said, "Hey, do you want to do my powerbomb?" And he's like, "Okay, will you let?" He goes, "What do I got to do?" He goes, "Just powerbomb me off the top rope." And he did it, got a great pop. and, you know, Marty got the pin there. But obviously, you know, 1-2-3 kid, he got the final pinfall. The Body Don is win the match. 1-2-3 kid's the survivor. Barry, like, how did you feel about this match overall?
I loved it. I thought it was, I thought we did our part. We did our job. I was glad to be part of it. I mean, it's on a big pay-per-view, a named pay-per-view. And that was, you know, just switching tracks real quick. That's Skip. That's Chris Candido all the way. See what I mean about getting the match over? He didn't have to do that. It was his idea. Skip has taken some major bumps. I mean, his body got busted up towards the end of his career. You know, a lot of guys take crazy bumps, and I mean, myself, but I never took, you know, Cactus Jack bumps. I'm not a professional stuntman. I'm a wrestler, and I'm not doing that anyway. I just don't want to. But Skip is all from bumping, you know, just bumping all over the place. I mean, inside, outside the ring, and I don't know how true this statement is, but I think he had to. I'm not sure about this statement. I've heard it. I think he had a school and tutor, Ahmed Johnson, for a while, and he said it was brutal. He was getting beat up. And we know where he's at now or where he's going or whatever, so nothing against him. But, yeah, I don't like the way the organization treated Skip, really. I think they mistook kindness for weakness. The whole Sonny thing, you know what I'm talking about, that three-ring circus that should have never happened or transpired. And, you know, between that and ribs and goofiness, it's, come on, grow up, gentlemen, including the owner. Grow the fuck up. I just don't like stuff like that. Of course, it's not run like that now. Oh, they all of a sudden, you know, guys have, oh, no, we can't do stuff like that now. Oh, really? You just finally smartened up that it's, you know, you know, you don't see this in the NBA or NFL, or maybe you do and we don't hear about it, but I'm sure there's more deaths in pro wrestling, I think, than any other sport or form of entertainment.
Yeah.
I still call it wrestling, by the way.
Oh, so do we. So do we. I won't refer to it as sports entertainment.
If you drive by Madison Square Garden on a wrestling night, on the marquee it says pro wrestling tonight. Okay? It doesn't say sports entertainment or tables, ladders, and chairs. It says pro wrestling tonight. Most venues do say that on the marquee. I don't care if it's the Spectrum in Philly or Boston Gardens or Madison Square Garden or friggin' Spot Show in Dothan, Alabama. It says pro wrestling tonight, and that's what I represent.
Yes, sir. Right. Definitely. Now, next match up on the card, it's Team Bertha Faye, which is Bertha Faye, Aja Kong. Oh, I'm going to butcher some of these names. Tomko Wanatabi and Lioness Asuka. And Lioness Asuka with Harvey Whippleman against Team Alundra Blaze. Obviously, Alundra Blaze, Kyoko Inoue, Saki Asagawa, and Chaparita Azari.
I'm already lost.
If I butchered the names, if somehow they're listening to this, ladies, I apologize.
a big name in there that you mentioned, though, Doug, is Aja Kong. Because we still hear from this lady today. She's one of the best women coming out of Japan, you know, with the face paint. She had the gimmick great. She represents a little more of a brutal style, but it's not the hardcore stuff or anything. It's just a little more, you know, you know Japan pretty well. You know the stiffness, obviously, a lot more than we do. But Aja Kong, very tough woman. And she was actually primed to get a good push here, right, before Alundra left, Doug?
From what I heard, and Barry, you might be actually able to, you know, kind of clue us in a little bit more here, but I had heard that Aja Kong was actually in line to beat Alondra for the title before Alondra took off the WCW. Do I have that
right? I never
right?
heard that.
Did you hear that?
Never heard it. Never heard it. Never heard it. Even rumor, never even heard it in passing, ever.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, did you, when Alondra took off and left the WCW, or left to go to WCW and took the title with her, like, did you guys, did anybody have any clue that she was going to do that?
Didn't know it, didn't really care. And at the time, women's wrestling wasn't where it is now. So really, you know, not my concern, and never even heard about it. And if it was talked about, it was a bare minimum.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Just being honest.
Yeah.
By the way, gentlemen, we're live right now, aren't we?
Yes, yes sir. Sir.
And where? How far do we go? Are we going all over the States or what? What are we doing?
Oh, we're on Spotify, Blog Talk, Apple, anywhere you can, all over the country.
Oh, cool, cool. I like to hear that. I was just curious. I didn't know.
Yeah, yeah. We are on all major podcast platforms, so anywhere you can listen to a podcast, you can find us on Scripted Wrestling.
Wow. I hope a lot of people are listening.
Yeah, so do we. So real quick, and Dan, I'm going to throw it to you real quick about this match. What did you think of this ladies' match?
A lot of my big takeaways was Alondra was always ahead of her time when it comes to women's wrestling, and just the technique and the ability and what she was able to do and the powerful aspect. Like she, especially when I look at wrestling, you know, as a core fan, I look at it as superheroes versus supervillains almost, where the good guy and the bad guy, you know, are in this epic confrontation, you know, kind of like, you know, Skip and Barry. You got the good guy and you got the bad guy. Now it's a lot more lines are different. Not some guys are in between, and that's fine too. But I thought Alondra was really good at that superhero role, where she was this lady that I think a lot of girls were like with Wonder Woman. I kind of want to be like Alondra Blaze. I thought she was really good in that role. And I thought the heel side with, and Whippleman, I always enjoyed him, you know, ringside, just because he was such a good manager. I don't want to say like annoying, but that was kind of his niche, was like the Jimmy Hart, like get under your skin. And
uh-huh.
All that,
that's a
all
shoot.
The heel women, everyone was good to go. You know, everyone wrestled their ass off. Like Barry said, it wasn't where it is today, obviously, but for the little time that they got, they gave him 10 minutes. So each girl, you know, they showed what they can do, and it was good in-ring work from what I saw. I liked the match. It didn't
right.
have a lot of heat. This was the one the crowd was kind of quiet off of because I don't think they really knew everybody in the match, but I thought it was good.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the crowd botched their names like I did earlier?
Probably.
Probably. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Butchered it alive.
Yeah. All right, Eric, what did you think of this ladies' match?
I thought it was pretty solid. Both women were how long? It was a 10-minute match?
Yes.
I thought it was good for what 10 minutes from what they showed.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Barry, let me ask you, do you remember this match at all?
Vaguely.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I watch. Here's the deal with me. I like watching matches. Let's see. You know, when I was in Mid-Atlantic, we were required. Everybody had to stay to the end. So I would be first or second match. And I'd have to stay till the end to watch every match. It was required. I like that idea that was infused and enforced by Crockett's. It's pretty smart move because I've watched a lot of other shows. I've watched, I would watch NWA from Georgia and Florida Championship Wrestling and World Class, anywhere where I could learn more. I was watching film, you know, because you learn that too. I mean, I've learned different moves. I've went over. I learned that Kabuki leg breaker. I always wanted to do that. I must have watched Kabuki do that 100 times before I tried it in the ring. And I did that. And, yeah, I'm a big fan of that. But if I'm on before somebody else's match, new, I'm going over my match, I'm warming up, I'm stretching, I can't do that. And then a lot of times we're on the road and we got to get to the hotel or you got to get to the airport or whatever, so I couldn't watch the other matches. But if I had to stay, yes, I wouldn't hang out in the locker room. First of all, I didn't want to, but second of all, I wanted to watch the matches. And I liked watching the matches, especially a good solid match. I'm going to see a lot of wrestling. You know, if I'm going to see a lot of ha-ha and ga-ga and clown stuff and girls stuff, I mean, nothing against them, but just the girls in every organization in today's product, they're wrestling like men because they've been taught by men, and they realize that it can't be foo-foo. And you got to, you know, I still see some little things, you know, if I was a road agent or whatever, unless they told me not to say nothing, there is certain things, it's my opinion, but I think I'm entitled to it, and I think I could back it up with over 30 years experience. And just different little things I would correct, I mean, with men and women, but that's me. So, but again, I'm being biased. I was taught by the best. To this day, I'll say that I was taught by the best. After what I see it gets broken in a few months and how they talk and how they disrespect the business or disrespect me, I'm not a fan of any of that stuff.
Right.
So.
Move on to Goldust and Bigelow.
Yeah, let's move on. Goldust and Bam Bam Bigelow. This was actually Bam Bam's last appearance in the company. Barry, did anybody know that this was going to be it for Bam Bam?
I don't think I remember that. I really didn't. I don't know. You know, I don't get caught up in a lot of the gossip. I don't have time, or I don't care, or it's none of my concern or business, but I don't remember that one. Maybe a little bit. Yeah, when it comes to Bam Bam, I really didn't care anyway. Not a fan.
Yeah. Well, and as a tactical mastermind, as someone that, you know, like you said about the gaga and stuff, and, you know, promos and everything is very much a part of it, and of course,
mm-hmm.
but for a guy that's known for getting in there and can put on a 20, 30-minute match or even a 15, 10-minute and make it interesting and,
mm-hmm.
you know, very
mm-hmm.
about the moves and stuff.
Yep.
Goldust and Bigelow, what did you think about their work? Just even if not even together but separate, because those are two very different styles to what you work.
I would say Bam Bam, for what he did, was solid for a big man that didn't train or work out. He's just a naturally big-boned dude. And the first with the, you know, the tattoo gimmick time thing and some of his promos, pretty solid. I'll give him that. Goldust, versatile. But I'm going to be honest with you. Goldust, Dustin Rhodes right this minute or just 6 months ago is a better worker, looks better than he ever has in his whole career.
Yeah.
Now, I will say when he was Dustin
Rhodes
with the blonde hair, it was short, combed when they were grooming them in WCW. Good baby face, you know, to finish the bulldog, whatnot. But he's actually toned up and looked better now, and his work is more solid now. It's like he's like reinventing himself, taking things more serious. Maybe he realizes as he gets older, he needs to take care of himself and update his body and his product and his work. And I don't think he works that much anymore. I think it was just to get the company going, you know, him and Cody, which that's funny. It's the only person I don't know in AEW is Cody Rhodes. So I never met. I know Dustin. I know his dad. I worked for both. You know, I worked with both of them. I worked with almost everybody there, except for new guys like Young Bucks and stuff like that. But for the most part, I mean, shit, I think Billy Gunn is one of the trainers, and I had his tryout match. Why am I sitting at home? Oh, that's another question. Yeah. I mean, Jerry Lynn, Yeah, pretty good. Defeated him for the global title. Yep. Mm-hmm. The only one that's really got authority is Dean Malenko, one of my mentors.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know the other guys, but you know, I know Jerry Lynn is, you know, a good worker and really quiet guy. But yeah, that's good that Billy's there. I mean, you know, different place, different strokes, different folks.
Yeah, I'll say this: a couple weeks ago on a special Saturday night episode of Dynamite, Dustin Rhodes actually wrestled Bryan Danielson. And
that should have been pretty good.
Oh my God, it was awesome.
Yeah,
right?
It was. And obviously Bryan Danielson got the win, but Dustin made him look like $1 million. And Dustin,
that's the way it goes.
And Dustin looked pretty damn good himself.
Yeah.
Good. Good. Excellent. Yeah. That's the way it should be. That's the way it should be. Yeah, I think I was Goldust, one of his first victims, I think. I normally am, which is, you know, that's part of my job description as far as, you know, that, Ultimate Warrior, plethora of other people. I guess I should feel flattered.
Yeah. Absolutely. Go ahead, Eric.
No, I have a question for Barry, but you go first, Daniel.
No, you go.
Go ahead, Eric.
Oh, I was going to ask you, do you work with Chris Jericho?
I'm sorry?
Have you worked with Chris Jericho?
You know, I have never worked Chris Jericho. I only met Chris Jericho like in the 90s when he was, what was it, Lionheart Chris Jericho? Like, he was like working in the middle, long blonde hair and baby face and... You know, he was young, probably 25 years old, I'm assuming.
Wow.
But when I did speak to him, very polite, this and that, because I think he was friends with Malenko and the little group there, and they all, you know, knew me. I wasn't part of that group, but I think they all maybe respected me or disrespected me, I don't know, as a technical wrestler.
Gotcha. Yeah. Real quick, Dan, what did you think of Goldust and Bam Bam?
I thought it was a good match. I thought the two guys really showed out. I liked the little storyline that they had going. And, you know, Bam Bam as an athletic big man is always fun to watch. And Goldust, you know, as much as people talk about the character, and I love the character of Goldust, and I thought everything he did was very cutting edge and ahead of its time. But the in-ring stuff for Dustin, he was, to me, he was always a very polished. I agree that his body is, he's really gone a long way recently to get himself into shape, and good for him. But in between the ropes, I always enjoyed his work, so I liked it. I was gonna ask Barry, though, because you were talking about, you know, being the first guy for a lot of people. Does that make you feel good, though, the fact that, because you really are, you were kind of a star maker, like before, like, a lot of the tried and true guys that became stars and, you know, made all this money and, you know, pushed the needle forward, they went through Barry Horowitz first. Does that give you a little, like, make you want to pat yourself in the back? Like,
because I didn't, like I said, I didn't have an ego. Oh, God, I got to do this, do that. I mean, I could always quit and go somewhere else and not make money and somebody else will take my place if they could. I got to allude to what you just said, star maker. I'll never forget Tim Horner saying that to me one time. You know what we are, Barry, huh? Star makers. I'll never forget that when he said that. Because think about it. When Tim Horner was in WWF or Al Perez or, oh, God, Bill Irwin, Tracy Smothers, they all did what I did. Not everybody could be Shawn Michaels or Undertaker or anything. I mean, you know, we know there's always a winner and loser. I mean, the Patriots lost. I mean, so it's just, but if you notice the names I just threw at you, we all could do the same thing. And what is that? I could get Undertaker over in 30 seconds and really make people believe that. I could ruin his career and be fired right after that match if I did the opposite. But the next night, on TV or a house show, I could go out there with Owen, Brett, Billy Gunn, Bart Gunn, Sting. I'll pull 15 or 20 minutes and call that match as the heel calling the match and get it over, get the match over. See, there's a difference between that and your just total enhancement. What's total enhancement in my eyes? All right, listen, I just want to show my friends I'm on TV. I got some shorts from Walmart or something. They say Nike on it. I got some wrestling boots. I ordered. It cost me all my money. I really don't have a great body. I got, you know, like 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound sock. You know, I don't look that good. I got the job face on when the camera comes on me and introduce me, and I just get beat up. There's a big friggin' difference. When I entered this world of pro wrestling and this game or whatever you want to call it, I didn't envision that. Even to this day, I invented myself, the pat on the back, my work. I mean, I'm not a fan. I'm not a legend in my own mind or believe the fans, but now you can. 20 years ago, they didn't know. They're smart marks. They know. They know what they see. And nobody was my father or nobody was my cousin or got me in or did it. I did this all on my own. So, you know, I'm proud of what I did and what people say. And if anybody says the opposite, I'm not mad or whined, but it's just like knocking Tom Brady. They're friggin' ignorant or jealous.
Oh, yeah.
Especially so-called main eventers that are making much more money than I ever have, and I don't even know if they're around or they're broke or they're living off of ramen or they killed themselves. But what are you worried about Barry Horowitz for? You're the sixth match and Barry's number two. Maybe we should switch places on the card if you're that worried and insecure. Maybe you should hit the gym more, and maybe you should learn how to do more than kick and clothesline and poke eyes. Okay?
Yeah.
That's how I look at it.
Yeah. Alrighty.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the best way to look at it, I think.
And you know what? While we're on this, why I'm on my little rant and rave or whatever you want to call it, I'm not hot or nothing. I'm just saying like it is. You know, if somebody else says this, let's just say Hulk Hogan or Sting or somebody, not too many people will say anything in the locker room listening to this interview. Some will. They may have too much to drink or they're jealous or something, which if you're on Hogan's card, shut your friggin' mouth. You're on his card, dude. You're on the A card. You're making big money. He sold this place out, not second match. So just do your job. But if they hear Barry Horowitz saying it, the pecking order on a totem pole, they'll knock me. See what I mean? And
yeah.
To those people, F you. I don't care about them. They don't care about me, my bills being paid, my family, any of that, and I don't care about them. Where are they now? Where's Barry now?
Right. There you go, sir. Absolutely.
Yep.
For any, like, fans that think that, I know you're more referring
yeah.
to the boys, but any fans that think that, we got YouTube now, they got the network, go look up some of the great work this man's done, putting some people over, and even, like, the Skip feud, definitely people should watch, but all the stuff you've done, I mean, now people can go back and YouTube it's facts, it's there.
Oh, yeah. My YouTube is crazy. I went to it, and I got tired of scrolling, and I'm not putting myself over. I must have scrolled my matches for over a half hour. I go, when is this thing going to run out? I mean, they got every friggin' match on there. I was impressed. I mean, I looked at one time, I'm working with Tommy Angel in Charlotte, which is, first of all, he's a good guy and a good worker, and I go, oh, my God, or Mark Fleming from Virginia, and I'm going, where did they get this stuff? It's really cool. So, yeah, and by the way, not only putting people over and making them look like they could really work, but also I could work with a Bret Hart that's is accomplished, So what do I add? I add flavor to the match. And then when you got guys that can't work, that is my total job. I really gotta dig deep to get this over, make them look like they could really work. But at the same time, yes, I could do that, but I also went over and could get myself over and have did it at pay-per-views and did it at dark matches and did it at other organizations and indie shows too. So the bottom line is, I like to call myself the total worker, you know? I didn't get to do as many promos as I'd like to do, and I thought my promos were okay. I thought they would get better with time and over, but when you only get to do a few here, a few there, you can't progress or perfect it or almost perfect like you want
right.
to. And then there's some guys, to this day, they can't talk, or they had to have a manager to talk for them. And I've had some managers, but I don't think it was for talking. I think it was for both talking and representing. And I got to say, by the way, my greatest manager was Sir Oliver Humperdinck.
Yeah, he's definitely one of the best.
Yes.
Especially his stuff in Mid-Atlantic.
Another underrated.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I've had various managers, but I don't know. I just, I gotta put him as the best. Yeah. I mean, he always treated me good and did well and stuff, and then there was other managers that didn't, and, you know, so I really don't think I needed a manager, to be honest with you. But
right.
whatever they want to do, it's their call.
Right. Now, we're actually going to, because we only have a few minutes left here.
Wow,
actually,
when you're having fun, it flies by.
Exactly, and we're having a blast.
Yeah.
But actually, before we get to, because I'm just going to skip right to the Bret Hart Diesel main event. But before we do that, I actually have to bring this up, you know, because Daniel talked about, you know, you working, you know, with some of the icons in the business. One memory that kind of sticks out for me, and this is only because I'm a fan of the team, you actually had the match with Rick Martel that kind of led to the forming of Strike Force with him and Tito Santana.
Uh-huh.
He has the match with you, or Martel
uh-huh.
has the match with you, he beats you,
uh-huh.
and Islanders attack, and then Tito runs out, makes a save, Strike Force forms, and
uh-huh.
I mean, that was one of my favorite tag teams when I was a kid, so that, to me, that's a personal favorite memory of mine, and you were a part of that.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. Rick Martel is an iconic worker. He's the real total package. His promos, his looks, his body, his work. I know Rick Martel, Tony Garea, since 81, since Vince Sr. And he's always been a gentleman to me. Yeah, he's always treated me good with health tips as far as training, stuff in the ring. Really good guy, Tony Garea also, and and Tito, I don't know, I mean, Tito, yes, but not as well as Garea and Rick Martel, and turning him heel as the model, what a friggin' great idea. That was awesome. I loved it.
I did, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I was sad to see, you know, my favorite tag team break up, but
had to be done for storytelling,
yeah.
bud.
But, yeah, I mean, it was just the only thing I really didn't understand, and, again, I'm not, you know, necessarily part of the wrestling business. We have a wrestling podcast, but I'm not necessarily part of the wrestling business. I just never understood why Martel and Santana could never get that, you know, proper payoff.
Well, there's a question. It's a good question, and it goes back to my situation. It just can't. Not everybody could be the Rock and Roll Express. Not everybody could be the Rockers. See what I'm getting at? Not everybody, I mean, look at Tom Zink and Martel. That's a good-looking team. there's so many tag teams. I mean, Demolition, Road Warriors. I mean, it just doesn't work out that way. Why? I don't know. I mean, Tito and Martel, are you kidding me? Ultimate baby faces. Good technical workers, look good, promos good. It's sometimes it's in my situation, like Jim Cornette said, I mean, sometimes you're just too good, or I mean, maybe I should have broke some rules. Maybe I should have been late. Maybe I should have failed drug tests. Maybe I should have refused not to put somebody over. It's just not my DNA. It's not in my DNA. I don't operate that way. I'm not wired that way. I wasn't taught that way. And unlike some others, and I'm not saying everybody, you know, there's guys in this business that never really paid their dues through the athletic ranks. Some played, you know, like Jim Duggan played football, and Dr. Death, Steve Williams, and Kurt Angle. But I think good example is One Man Gang. I don't think he was ever a football player, amateur wrestler, just a big guy and got taught pro wrestling. Some of them pan out good, and then some of them don't. I mean, I've seen guys like that walking around in Walmart or the mall looking at being, you go, boy, he could be a pro wrestler. Well, no, you can't. It's not as easy as you think. If everybody could be a pro wrestler making big money, then everybody would be. Believe me.
Right.
Some of these guys in baseball or football, they take a body slam or a suplex in a workout ring. They're not waking up too good the next morning, I'm telling you. It's tough work. I was bumping on judo mats from Jody Malenko for 6 months. Judo mats getting backdrop suplexed. A judo mat is about an inch or two high. When I got into a ring, I thought I was in La La Land. I said, oh, my God, thank you. But guess what? I'm glad I did that. I'm glad I paid my dues learning that way and sometimes slept in my car and worked, never worked for free. I would get beat up by Malenko. You never work for free. Elvis don't sing for free and Barry don't wrestle for free. But, I mean, I paid my dues with, you know, numerous things, and I'm glad. Like, I got, you know, I'm a big country music fan, but if you ever listen to The Dance by Garth Brooks or The Climb by Miley Cyrus, the bottom line of those songs, the situation in that song, the big thing about that song, the main ingredient is paying dues to get to the dance.
Yep. Right.
Why do you want to be broken in and they put the Southern Championship on you in Florida in 2 weeks after you just got broken in? Well, don't you want to pay your dues? Believe me, it will make a better athlete and a better pro wrestler and a better person that way if you're taught that way. I'm a big believer in that.
Right.
And yeah, if you ever listen, you get a quiet time, you're in the car, listen to The Dance, every word, and listen to Miley Cyrus's "The Climb." There's others, but those two stick out. In my life, in my personality.
Definitely, we'll definitely have to do that. We'll see. You have Spotify, Dan. So obviously, you know.
I mean, I'm a big. The Climb is a very good song.
Yeah,
I would agree.
Mm-hmm. And I do like Garth Brooks.
Yeah.
So all right, so we're gonna get into this. The main event of Survivor Series '95. There was no disqualification for the WWF title. Diesel defending against Bret Hart. Diesel had been champion for 358 days. Barry, you were obviously there during his title run.
Uh-huh.
Was Diesel the worst drawing WWF champion of all time?
No, I don't think so. You got to understand, I was there in WCW when they got a hold of him, Master Blaster. One of his many gimmicks, Master Blaster, with this kid named Corey from, I don't know where he's from, Idaho. He couldn't cut it. And then they put Al Green in there. And you got to give the guy credit. First of all, if you ever listen to Kevin talk when he's not one-lining you or joking with you, he's a pretty intelligent guy. I think he is anyway. And he does have some good jokes. And for being a guy that, you know, is a legit 7 foot, got himself in really good shape when he was Diesel. I mean, the hair, the look, the promos. You got to understand, he did all these, Vinny Vegas and all that, comes to WWF as Shawn's bodyguard. He goes from that to Big Daddy Cool, Big Sexy, Big Diesel, world champion. I mean, pretty impressive. I've never had a problem with him, jokes around and stuff like that, but that's just the nature of the business. I don't have a problem with that. I don't put shit over like that anyway. I don't have time for that. I don't really care. It's silly. But he's I've been there when he comes out and, you know, and steps over that top rope, and yeah, I don't know the logistics or the gates and stuff, so I don't know that end of the business, but I don't know if he was the worst ever WWF champion or drawing power. I don't know about that for that era.
Now, I mean, you've seen this match between Brett and Diesel, right, at the Survivor Series, this no-DQ match?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What did you personally think of the match?
You know, I thought, you know, Brett, of course, always, you know, his work is solid. I thought what Diesel did, everything that he does, I mean, he's limited, but I've seen worse than him. I mean, I've seen much worse than him. For being 7 foot and looking like he does in his outfit and everything about him, everything he did, I thought was pretty good. That big foot he does when he shoots off, or those elbows in the corner, which I think he innovated those. People try to replicate it, but they don't do it like Kevin does. And his punches and when he did sell, I don't know. I thought it was solid.
Okay. I mean, I think, and Kevin Nash actually talks that this is the best match he ever had, or one of the best matches he's ever had, with Brett. So,
right.
And I personally am a fan of it. Dan, I know when we watched it last night, you were a fan of it.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
It's
definitely
the best match I've ever seen in Nash.
Right. Go ahead, Barry. You were trying to say something.
No, I'm saying definitely main event material, main event match. I liked it. It was labeled no DQ. I like stuff like that. I'm a big fan of stuff like that. I miss the different things that, you know, maybe AEW could do this every now and then. Is I would have like a Texas Death Match. I would have a lights out match, no DQ match, I quit match, a bull rope match. Those things people like, I'm telling you. And you don't need to do it every friggin' TV or every pay-per-view, but, you know, like they did it, you know, back in the day, they would build it up where you would have every match, and then the blow-off would be, normally the blow-off match would be the Texas Death Match. And, you know, and that would end the program or the angle. But I like that. You could do that with the same guy and work with them maybe 12 times in a year, because every match is different. They don't think of the match. They're thinking, oh, it's a lights-out match. Oh, it's a Texas bull rope match, you know, or I quit match. You know, it's different, and it keeps it innovated and updated. I like that. I'm a fan of that. It adds to the pro wrestling ambiance, if you will.
Right. I will say this real quick. I believe AEW did have a bull rope match once, and I'm pretty sure Dustin Rhodes was in it.
Good. That's awesome.
He actually wrestled one of the young up-and-coming guys. The guy's name is Nick Camarado. He's you know, big guy, beard, you know, big beard, you know, bushy hair. Great look.
There's like 10,000 of those now, by the way.
Yeah. But Dustin did a hell of a job in that match, which obviously, you know, it's Dustin, so.
Right.
Sure.
But yeah, so they did have that match. Unfortunately, We are running out of time.
All right.
But Barry, thank you so much.
Yeah, it was a great time.
Oh, thank you, guys. I appreciate it. I love being live. I loved your questions. I like your preparation. All the guys in there, everything was really cool and well done. I hope the fans like it. And, again, live is cool. I like that. And as we say in the wrestling business, live is the she is it, if you know what I mean, Zine.
Absolutely. Thank you again so much for being on. We hope to have you on again soon. So
I hope
too. Yeah, I will definitely be in touch with both yourself and your son Josh, who I gotta thank Josh too for helping put this together.
And also a shout out to Richie Sorrentino. He takes care of my Facebook, and he's really good. He handles things well and keeps pictures updated and news. And I want to thank you guys for having me on, and I want to leave you with this. I mean, I've said everything I had to say. Thanks for letting me do what I'm doing in life in the beginning, because sometimes you don't have time at the end or we're rushed. And, I wanted to thank you for all that. But I also wanted to tell you that there is, I think, with this statement, there is a lot of great wrestlers out there. I'm kind of saying that loosely, but Barry Horowitz wrestles great.
And with that being said, everyone have a great night. We'll see everybody next week. And thank you, Barry Horowitz.
Thank you. And give everybody pat yourselves on the back all at one time. The whole nation.
Yes, sir.
Thank you
very
much.
There you go. Thank you, guys.
Have a good one, Barry.
All right.
Thank you. You too.
Later.